So the first class we discussed about the holy name doesn't require initiation, but then if we don't get initiated, that's an offense to the holy name. So now the next topic, because some people say, oh, God is within the heart, God is within the heart, and God is in my heart, Antaryami, Paramatma, and God is in everyone's heart. So why do we need Guru? God is in my heart. I pray to Chaitya Guru, to Paramatma, and I try to be a good person. And why can't I get liberated without Guru? So this is this discussion. Can we get liberated? Can we realize God without Guru? Because many people think this. Actually, all the Shastras are saying that we must come to the platform of surrendering to Guru. Without taking instructions from a Guru or some higher authority, we don't actually know. This is the interesting point. Because to attain perfection, with or without Guru, you have to surrender to God. And that's told everywhere. You must surrender to God. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharman prityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Sharanam, shelter, surrender. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender unto me. Mamekam sharanam vraja. He says, don't be afraid. Masucha, Krishna is saying, don't be afraid, because you might say, well, if I surrender to God or Guru, I'm afraid this will happen or that will happen, or what will happen about this, what about that. And Krishna is saying, don't be afraid. So Krishna himself is saying that you must surrender to higher authority. So now the reason, one of the main reasons why we surrender to Guru, because we won't actually know whether we're surrendered or not unless we surrender to a Guru. Because we might say, well, I'm surrendered. We might think, oh, I'm a surrendered soul. Krishna says in Gita, surrender unto me. So, okay, I surrender to Krishna. I surrender to God. He's in my heart. I'm surrendered. But we may think we're surrendered, but unless we're actually under the shelter of a living God, or a living representative of God, we can't really know whether we're surrendered or not. Because our nature, the nature of a conditioned soul, is self-delusion. Self-delusion means we delude ourselves. We think we're something that we aren't. We have the tendency, it's called the tendency towards self-delusion. It's called, there's four defects of the conditioned soul. One is Brahm. Brahm is the tendency to be illusion. Then Vipralipsa. Vipralipsa means the tendency to cheat. The cheating propensity. We cheat. We cheat. Husbands cheat wives. Wives cheat husbands. We cheat on the taxes. We want to get a little extra, do a little cut here, cut there. It's a cheating propensity. It's called Vipralipsa. There are four defects. Commit mistakes, imperfect senses. Karanapatva, Vipralipsa, Brahma, and Pramad. Sanskrit terms. Four defects. So unless we actually surrender to a living representative of God, we won't know if we're really surrendered or not. And that's, it'll explain. Because surrender is not something material. Our mind is filled with different samskaras, which means impressions. And they're according to what actions we've done in this life, in previous life, it makes impressions in our chitta. It makes, you can say, some carving or some impression. I don't know what to say, an impression. Makes some lasting mark in our consciousness. And what happens, because of our different samskaras, which our minds are filled with, we will rationalize our own desires. We'll actually rationalize our own desires. And we'll think, and these types of samskaras, which we've cultivated for many lives, these samskaras will make us think, this is all right. What I'm doing is all right. What I'm doing is quite fine for me. Not surrendering to Guru, not taking Diksha. It is all right. God, and we'll rationalize because of our material desires to be independent of God and not to surrender. We will rationalize and we'll stay amongst ourselves. I mean, we'll tell ourselves, yes, I'm doing quite all right. So who will tell me at that time if this desire is all right or not all right? Or if I'm liberated or not liberated? If I'm liberated, my intelligence, if I'm actually liberated, because some people say, you don't need a guru to get liberated. God is in your heart. You surrender to the Lord in the heart. Krishna says, Sarva dharman pratyaja mamekam sharanam braja. He just abandoned all religion and surrendered unto me. Okay, I'm surrendered. But what Guruji is telling in these notes, he's saying, how will you know whether you're surrendered or not? Because we have the tendency, it's called viparlipsa, cheating propensity, the tendency towards self-delusion. Because of our samskaras, our previous mental impressions due to our punya or pap, punya karma or papa karma, sinful activities or good activities, religious or pious activities, we will have a certain type of mental makeup. It's called, in modern vernacular, it's called mindset. And this mindset will make us rationalize our desires. And we will think, this is all right. This is all right. That I'm my own guru. Who needs a guru? Because even some gurus, popular gurus in the marketplace, they say, anyone who tells you you need a guru, he's bogus. You're your own guru. Now, he himself is acting as a guru to tell you that. So if you use Naya, by the principle of Naya, his very statement itself nullifies him. So he should walk out first. Because he's telling you, he's giving a lecture. Anyone who tells you you need to surrender to guru, he's bogus. You guru is within. You are your own guru. And he's telling you. So he's outside of you. He's not you. He's a different person beside yourself. And he's telling you. But there's many people in the moving in Bombay and Delhi that are preaching like this. Any Shastra, this is mythology, even a Shastra, Gita says or Puran says that you need a guru, then this is bogus, this is mythology. You are the guru, you're the architect of your own destiny. The guru is within you. Just look within you. And you're there, yes, Guruji. Yes, Guruji, you are correct. Here's 100 rupees, you know. Thank you for the class. Leadership training. Leadership into the 21st century. They have all these titles, these different so-called seminars. But according to Ved Puran, Guru is essential. Without Guru, then we'll think we won't actually have any standard, any rod stick or measuring standard to know whether we're really surrendered or not. Krishna says, Sarvadhamman Pritya Mamai Kam Sharanam Braja, to take shelter of Mam Sharanam. Yes, I've surrendered to Krishna. Like sometimes people say, oh yes, I love Krishna. You meet some people, oh yes, I love Krishna very much. And you say, oh, how are... Then, okay, you love Krishna very much. Can you explain to me, how are you expressing your love towards Krishna? Oh, I just love him. He's so nice. I love Krishna. And I have his picture in my house and on my car and my dashboard of my car. I have a little necklace with Krishna's picture. And in my office, I have his picture. Krishna is very nice. He's a very nice God. I love Krishna very much. I really love Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, I love Krishna. I chant, in my mind, I'm always chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I don't need any of this mala, this beads, mala. This is all ritual. I don't believe in this ritual stuff. I mean, God's in my heart. Krishna, I know Krishna loves me and I love Krishna. You know how many people have this philosophy in India? 999 million. There's only a few. 999 million. And this philosophy is 100, is not 99%. This philosophy is 100% bogus, fallacious, incorrect, imagination. It's pure sentiment. Prabhupada once said, religion without philosophy is sentimental, and philosophy without religion is speculation. Right? You have to think about it. If you just philosophize, well, it's like this, it's like that, creation is like this, but it doesn't bring you to the point of religion. You're just speculating. You have your opinion, I have my... Every man is entitled to his opinion, each to his own. You have your opinion, I have my opinion. So you philosophize, that's all I believe, creation like this, life is meant for this, and we should like be a good man, and this, that. It's all speculation. Philosophy without religion, philosophy being a dharma, it is only as in the words of one professor I had in college, he said it's a mental masturbation. Excuse the English. But... It's a rather graphic description. One college psychology professor, who is religious also, you can go on. And every man is in the Muni. It has his ideas, but philosophy means that body of knowledge, that vastu, that tattva, which will help you understand existential reality. What is the reality? Who am I? What is this world? Is there another world? This is Prakrit Dham. Is there a Prakrit Dham? Is there a higher world, a higher realm? What is the essence of life? What is the meaning of life? Is it only eat, sleep, mate, and die? Eat, sleep, mate, and die? Is there something more? Is there something more substantial? So philosophy thinking should lead us to religion. Because religion means religio. The Greek word, the word religion comes from the Greek. Religio means to connect, reconnect, to join, yoga, to connect. Connect the finite with the infinite. Connect the Atma with the Paramatma. Connect the limited with the unlimited. Connect the Jiva with Bhagavan. It's a sambandha relationship. So this is philosophy. And the highest philosophy is Dharma, or Sanatana Dharma. And that's Gita. Gita Purana is Sanatana Dharma. So therefore, this is philosophy without religion is speculation. And then religion without philosophy is just fanaticism. Anyone that doesn't accept Allah, die by the sword. What is it? What is this? This is fanaticism. God, Bhagavan has many names, and there are many different ways to worship God according to your prakriti. There's trigunamayi. Some people are sattvagun, rajagun. There's different gunas which makes different chitta, different consciousness. There's sattvic chit. There's rajasic chit and tamasic chit, and then there's combinations. That's why you have the four varnas and the four ashrams. And what is a Brahmin? A Brahmin is supposed to be sattvic. What is a kshatriya? He's a little sattvic and raja. That's why he's rajagun. And then what is a vaishya? He's mostly raja with some tama. And what is a shudra? Shudra is all tama. Tamagun, ignorance, mostly. And so the characteristics. So they have a certain chitta, a certain consciousness. So their outlook is influenced by the primary or predominant mode of nature or gun that they're made of, their makeup. It's called their psychophysical makeup. Psychophysical makeup, which is guna, triguna. And Shastra is called guna. There are combinations, like Guruji used to say. If you take red, yellow, and blue are the primary colors. And you mix them this way and that way, and you got unlimited colors. 100 shades of yellow, 100 shades of orange. So the same way, you take the trigunas. There's tamagun, rajagun, and sattvagun. There's goodness and passion and ignorance. So you mix 3 by 3, you get 9 times 9, you get 81. And keep mixing, you get 8,400,000 varieties of jivas, living entities. Not jivas, but bodies. Insects, 2 million insect species, 400,000 human species, 1,100,000 insects, 900,000 aquatics. These are all genus or species in Vedas. You can see in Skanda Puran, Padma Puran, the breakdown of living entities, beasts and birds and insects and aquatics and reptiles, snakes, human beings, and chimpanzees and devas and apsaras and gandharvas and kinnaras and kimpurushas. Right? Kinara. There's the Kinaras, we say angels or celestial beings. And actually the word is Kimnara. Kimnara. Kimnara means, what kind of Nara is this? Kimnara. Nara means human. Because it looks like human being, a very subtle body. Their body is not made of so much earth and water as our body. It's very, our linga sharir is quite gross elements. But their body, their sharir, their body is made of mostly of ethereal element, more buddhi. Buddhi. Man and Buddhi, their external body. It's very subtle. And they have wings. In the Bible, it says angels. But in Veda, it's called Kinnara. So when people first see them, if a human being has darshan of that, this subtle being, they'll say, oh, Kinnara, Kimnara. What? Kone, like Kone. What is it? There's another type of one of the 400,000 human species called Kimpurusha. Kimpurusha. And this Hanuman, he's a Kimpurusha. Kimpurusha looks something like monkey, but he speaks Sanskrit. You ever go to the jungle and find a monkey that speaks Sanskrit? It's not a jungle monkey. It's not a gorilla. So this Hanuman is not a chimpanzee. He's not a monkey. He's a Kimpurusha. Because when you first see him, you say, well, wait a minute. Is he a Purusha? Is he a human being? Or, but he's so hairy and looks something like a monkey, human. So it's Kimpurusha. And there's a planet called Kimpurusha Loka. There was a movie, it's very funny actually. When we were growing up, there was a movie, a Hollywood movie called Planet of the Apes. It's called Planet of the Apes. I don't even remember. It was some planet where all the apes, I think it was Earth planet, but all the apes went wild. The apes means like gorillas. They went wild and beat up all the people or something, took over the planet. If we stay devoid of guru or without guru shelter or diksha, then we may think, well, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I'm doing quite well. I'm a vegetarian now, and my mind is quite peaceful, and I feel quite sattvic and balanced, and I see I'm equipoised. And I've read the Bhagavad Gita, And I think I had this vision. Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Brahmani Gavi Hashtani, Shuni Chaiva Supakeja, Pandita Samadarshana. A pandit has Samadarshan. Krishna's telling Gita, this is Vidya Vinaya Sampane, Vidya Vinaya, Brahmani Gavi Hashtani. He sees a Brahmin, a Gavi Hashtani. He sees an elephant or a Brahmin or a Swapacha, a dog eater or a child. He sees them all equally. Samadarshan, Samadristi. Equal vision. Oh, he sees. Oh, there's so many different bodies. But in every body, there's a Paramatma. There's Antaryami, Shiradakshay Vishnu. And I'm very Shanti, Shanti, Shanti He. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti He. I am doing well. I don't need Guru. So I think actually, I think I'm liberated. I'm actually liberated. There's no Rajagun in me. There's no Tamagun. I am God. Namo Narayan, Aham Narayan, Aham Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. So, the question can be asked, who will tell us if we're actually liberated or not? We may think like that. Many people get into this kind of, they work themselves into this kind of transcendental psychosis. Transcendental psychosis, where they really think they're something grand. But if I'm actually liberated, my intelligence will be so pure that I will figure out the right path of action. And if I'm not liberated, that means I'm still within the three modes of nature. That means I'm still covered by the trigunas. I'm influenced. Some influence of passion or even goodness. Goodness itself is binding. Krishna says in Gita, sattva-guna is also binding. One becomes conditioned by the sense of happiness. You can say these are what they call, in California, used to call them the good people or the beautiful people. The beautiful people, they have bodily beauty and they have money and they eat vegetarian food and they have very healthy bodies and they feel very peaceful and they do yoga and they do pranayama and they have everything and they feel like, you know, we're already there. We're liberated. So it's kind of an intoxication. This is a type of an intoxication of sattva-gun. They're doing yoga. Their bodies are sattvic. They're thinking high thoughts about God and this and that. So they may think. But this is actually conditioning. This is also a conditioning. It's an influence of sattva-gun. Be conditioned by the happiness and peace that sattva-gun brings. Because when we grow up our entire life in rajagun and tamagun and all kinds of tamasic habits and eating and thinking, and we actually enter into a path of sattva-gun by yoga, yoga-achar, yogic behavior, then we feel such relief. We feel such relief from our previous entanglements and bondage, the bondage of ignorance and the bondage of passion. Because when you get transcendental knowledge, when you get yoga darshan, when you study yoga darshan or Patanjali's yoga sutras and other philosophical works, your mind starts to elevate to sattva-gun. And then you start to enjoy sattva-gun. And that's also conditioning. That's not liberated. You're also still bound. This is the problem with Narada Muni. When Narada Muni was in the forest, he had one darshan of Narayan. He had sakshat darshan of Narayan. And Narayan spoke to him. It's called Akashvani. Aerial voice. Narayan said, Narad, you're seeing me now, but you will never see me again in this life. Only this one time, but never again. Narayan. So then Narad was always searching. Narayana, 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 Narayana. So Narada Muni Bhajana Vina Radhika Ramana Name. So why did Narada Muni in that incarnation in Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, why did he only have one darshan? And it's explained by Shuka Muni that because he had van vasana. Van vasana. He had van vasana means he had the desire to live in the forest. He wanted to live in a peaceful place. I want to live in the country, in a peaceful place with fresh air and a nice stream and good vibes. I want to be peaceful. Hey, shanti, man, shanti, shanti, peace, man, peace. I want to be happy and peaceful. So that's vasana. Vasana means desire. So that's So to live in the forest is sattva-gun. It's very pure, it's very clean, pure air, pure water, at least, quote, technically. Or it was somewhere at one time. But that's a desire, and that's a product of sattva-gun. So that conditions him. So the Acharya is saying because of that, then he had to give up that. That's why he started wandering. He became Paribrajak. He started wandering through all the mining towns. But before that, he was in the forest, and he rather liked it. He was attached to it. It's called Vanvasana. These points are indicating that on our own, we may mislead ourselves or misconstrue our exalted states of realization, which are actually byproducts of sattva-gun, by receiving some spiritual knowledge and readjusting our prakriti, readjusting the prakriti, from elevating our prakriti from tamagun to rajagun to sattva-gun. And that experience of sattva-gun, when you clean out your system, often people fast. We did so many fastings when we were karmis or before devotional life. 7-day grape juice fast and honey and lemon juice, all these different types of cleansing fast. Cleanse the diet, cleanse the body of all toxins and accumulated sludge and crud and junk from so many potato chips and ice cream and mom's apple pie and rajma and rubbery and all this chapan bog and chaka chuk and all this stuff. Clogs up the pipes. This is also a plumbing system. Your pipes get clogged up with calcium carbonate and all these minerals, and you have to change the pipes that get clogged up. So in the West, they're very keen on all this body health, body shop, fasting, intestinal cleansers, enemas, lugga lugga. You have Isab Gol and Isab Bale, similar type things. So we were doing all these things. So when you do that, when you actually fast for 7 or 10 days and take colonics and colon cleansers and enemas, your eyes start to sparkle. You would start to realize how dead your body, what a dead body you really have. How dull and covered this body really is. Because mostly our bodies are totally tamasic and rajasic. But when you fast for 10 days or 2 weeks on just grape juice, no cheating with potato chips, only grape juice, pure grape juice, you become like, you know, air, your body elevates, you become so sattvic. You can hear subtle sounds, you can see better, you can, and when you know, it's kind of like you can hold your hand out like that for 10 hours without moving. Now you try it. Most people have so much salt. People eat so much salt, after 5 minutes their hand will start shaking. They don't have Parkinson's disease either. Parkinson's disease is a nervous, you know, when you're old. 25-year-old boy or girl in Delhi, their hand will start shaking after 5 minutes because so much salt, which is irritating nerve endings. So they can't have any shanti. It's all rajagun. Rajasic food makes you, so you can't do meditation. Your mind is always chinta. That's why yoga is a whole way of life. This is bhakti yoga, this is param yoga. Krishna talks about eating in Bhagavad Gita. Yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little. Right? So that's a whole, you know, another shift. But this is all the kind of things in sattva-gun we can get bewildered. So if we're not actually liberated and we're still underneath or within the control of the three modes, our intelligence will be colored by the modes. So that my intelligence will choose, we will choose accordingly and make adjustments, and then our mind will rationalize. Therefore, it's actually impossible without taking initiation from a guru to become liberated. This bhakti or braj bhakti is very, very rare. It's very difficult for us to give up attachment to our own thoughts and accept without any designation or hidden motives what the shastric injunctions. The process is simple, but it becomes complicated because of our minds. that's a fact. And Gita, Krishna says, if the mind is uncontrolled, it is the worst enemy. That's in, I suppose, sixth chapter, yoga chapter. If the mind is uncontrolled, it's our worst enemy. But if the mind is controlled, it's our best friend. So now next question. So how do we know if our mind is controlled or uncontrolled? You know. It's uncontrolled. So how do we know? So this is a catch-22. Therefore, Krishna clearly says in Bhagavad Gita, this is in 7th chapter, 14th verse, Daivyesha Gunamayi. Another verse? Daivyesha Gunamayi? Mama Maya. Mama Maya Durat Yaya. It's a beautiful shloka. Beautiful shloka. And Krishna is like, it's a Geet. Geet means song. He's dancing on the chariot. Arjuna is sitting there. Bhishma, Dronacharya, Dhritarashtra, Karna. He's like dropped his Gandiva, he's there. And Krishna's just singing, Daiviye Shigunamayi, Mama Maya Dharatya, Mama Viye Prabhadyate, Mayam Metam Tarantite. He's a Gita, it's Bhagavad Gita. He's doing a little tap, you know, taps, you know. He's doing tap dance, you know, taps, tap yes, shoes. He's doing a little tap dance on the chariot. And just singing it. And Arjuna's, yeah, you're having a good time, but I'm totally dejected and lamenting. Crying over my relatives, I'm so attached. My heart is burning, my mind is reeling, and you're singing. What is this? Because Arjuna is telling these same words. He says, my heart is burning, my mind is reeling. I've dropped my Gandiva, I'm lamenting, I'm going crazy, and you're just singing. Sarva Dharma and Pritta Jamam. You're just singing. Krishna, is this some time to sing a song? In the middle of the battlefield, you think it's fun? You think it's a funny thing? And Krishna's smiling. If you see in the descriptions of Acharya's Tikas and Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is smiling. And even sometimes in the Sanskrit, it says Krishna is smiling. Smita. Smiling at Arjuna, Krishna said. Arjuna, you're speaking learned words. Anvashochanscham. But you're acting like a fool. You're speaking such learned words, but you're acting like a fool. Mudha. So that's the point that the question is, we won't know. Whether our mind is controlled or uncontrolled. Therefore, Krishna is saying that this verse that we quoted or sung, is that Krishna is telling Arjuna that this material world is impossible. This Daivyesha Gunamayi, this Gunamaya, this Gunamaya Prakriti. This Prakriti is Gunamaya. It's made, Maya means it's made of, it's saturated with the gunas. Everywhere you'll find the three gunas. Everything's in trees. Trees are everywhere. You can't escape the threes. It's a world of threes. Good, better, best. The rich, the middle class, the poor. Everywhere it's threes, right? Small, medium, large. Why? Because there's three gunas. Sattvagun, Rajagun, Tamagun. Everywhere there's three. So he's saying, Daivyesha Gunamayi. He says, Mama Maya, this is Mama Maya, this is my Maya. These gunas are mine. I am Gunatita. I am Gunatita. I have conquered these gunas. I am above these gunas. I am Brahman, I am Parabrahman. But you, Arjuna, and everyone in this world, we are all under these gunas. Daivyesha Gunamayi, Mami. But it's impossible. It's like trying to swim across the ocean. You can't swim across the Atlantic Ocean. It's not possible. But Krishna gives a hint. Okay, this is Daivyesha. All this world is just modes of nature. Mami Vye Prapadyante. But there is a way. There is a way out. There's a way to cross the ocean by prapadyante, prapanam. Surrender to Krishna. He's saying, mam evaye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. He's saying, you surrender unto me, then taranti. You can get, and even a Hindi word like that, right? Tarant, tarant. Tarant means quickly or something. So tarant, and taranti means to get free. Like we have this goddess, Durga, Dinatarani. Dinatarani is the name for Durga. She's a deliverer, the fallen. Dinatarani. Tarani means deliver in Sanskrit. So, Mamevaye Prapadyante, Mayametam Tarantite. He says, you surrender unto me, I will deliver you out of this world. Krishna will take us out of the modes of nature. So, therefore, as his teachings explain, that without Guru, who is a representative of Krishna, then it's impossible to get liberated. Krishna is telling you, you can't get out. You have to surrender unto me. Because this is a topic in discussion, how Guru is required. Because Krishna is saying, this Maya is Mama Maya, Mama Maya Duratya. This is my Maya. Dura, Duratya. It's very difficult. Dura means difficult, hard. Very difficult to cross. And we have this Durga Devi. Durga Devi, Ma Durga. like the house, the mother of the house. So she's the mother of the house. She's the queen of the house, the mother. So this is one small house. You may have a mother. But this material world is like a house. It's called a prison house. Durga. Ma Durga. Dura means difficult. Ga means going. Difficult going. It's hard to move. It's very difficult to move in this world. Everyone knows that. To move a mass over some space requires the input of energy. The bigger the object, the more the energy required to move it. So it's very difficult to move anything. Just see on Monday morning how difficult it is to get out of bed and go to work. It's very difficult to move the mass of your body out of the bed. So it's very difficult. Durga. Our Guruji explained like this, that this material world is very difficult. Durga also means in Sanskrit, Durga means prison house, means fortress. Fortress, prison house. There's big high walls and there's a moat around it and there's alligators in the moat. And beyond the moat, this body of water, beyond the moat there's an electric fence, and beyond that there's lions, and beyond that there's cobras. It's very difficult to get in to attack that fort or to get out of this material world. This material world is considered a fortress. And Durga is control. She is the prison warden. Durga. Very difficult going. So he's saying, Mama Maya Duratyaya. This Mama Maya, this Maya, this material energy, this is my Maya, Bhagavan is saying in Gita. And it's Duratyaya. It's Durga. It's difficult. Not only difficult, impossible. It is impossible. It is impossible for a man or woman to swim across the Atlantic Ocean. And that's a measured body of water. It has its border. But imagine how broad and vast is this material universe. To cross this universe on our own strength, without Guru Kripa, without Bhagavan Kripa, it's impossible. So Krishna is saying, the only way it's possible is by surrendering to Him. Mame Vyai Prapadyante. So this is Gita's instruction. You can only get free from Maya by taking shelter of Krishna. And that happens by inspiration, which comes from Krishna Himself. This is very interesting. Because we think, due to hankar, due to false ego, we think we're very special. We think we're very qualified. We think we're very intelligent. We're very resourceful. We're very, able. We're very able, qualified, intelligent, cultured, independent. We don't need anybody, especially God. So this is, of course, a foolish idea, but many people have this idea. But every once in a while, in the sojourn of the jiva, by good fortune, he gets it's called inspiration. In Sanskrit, the word is prachodayat. 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 One gets inspired. He gets inspired to have higher thoughts. Something comes from within. In science, they call it the aha principle. Aha. A-H-A. Aha. For example, many of the greatest scientists in the world that were pondering over a particular invention, over a particular formula in physics or quantum mechanics or astrophysics or some very difficult science, they're thinking, how does this happen? How does this work? And they're sitting maybe even in the jhan or in the latrine or whatever you call it here, the water closet. John is in the jhan. Matthew is in the water closet. At any rate, the latrine, the bathroom. And so they're sitting there and they're thinking, E equals MC squared or whatever, and they're trying to solve some formula or invent something. And aha! Aha! That's it! And then they run out and write it down. That's called the aha principle. They're on their computers, they're doing so much calculations and writing on the blackboard, if this equals to that, and this aphorism, and this theory, and this thing, and that thing, and this equals to that, and then they're trying to think and think on their own, with their own power, their own intellectual ability and acumen and perception. It's like this, and I learn this, and I understand this, and I extrapolate this, and I extrapolate that, and I conclude this. That's all their cognitive functioning. They're extending themselves to the fullest degree in their investigation and their study, in their calculation, and still there's no answer. They're at an impasse. It's called an impasse. No solution. They're blocked. Then the wife says, "Hey, John, take the dog out for a walk," because he has to also go to the job. So then John takes the dog out for the walk. He's walking along and looking at the birds in the park. Aha! That's it. That's the answer. Now, who gave him the answer? There's no computer, no calculator, no this, that, anything, no blackboards, no pen, anything. Where did that answer come from? The scientists say it's the aha principle. This problem was solved, this invention was made by the aha principle. But we say it's a paramahatma, paramatma. It is the paramatma, antaryami, super soul, it is Bhagavan, it is God. God gave the answer out of his mercy because you were struggling so much. And then once you get the answer by aha principle, then you put your name on it, Heisenberg Principle of Uncertainty. Now that's an important thing to study. Heisenberg's Principle of Uncertainty. Is it a wave or a particle? I think it's a wavicle. Is it a moving wave with no fixed locus? Or is it a moving wave with no fixed locus? Or is it a fixed point situated in one place? Well, it's moving so fast that by the time you see it, now you see it, now you don't. So it looks like a point. It looks like a particle, a solid particle, but actually it's a moving as a wave. So it's not a point. It's not a wave. It's a wavicle. It's a wavicle. A wave, you get it?
Yes.
Particle, which is a solid particle, or a wave. A wave or a part. It's a wavicle. So this is a scientist, and then of course you have to put your name on. Although it's God gave you the answer. So this is what is called prachodayat, inspiration. So sometimes a punyajiv, a very fortunate soul, he gets inspiration that actually, if I want to get liberated, if I want to get free from samsara, janma mritu javyadi, from the repeated cycle of birth and death, I need help from outside myself. I need divine guidance. I need the shelter and the shiksha of a realized teacher, guru. I must find guru to get out from this world, to realize myself, to realize God. Then that begins the search for liberation. So that inspiration comes to a very fortunate jiva, sobhagya jiva, very fortunate jiva. And then the next question is, well, how do you get that inspiration if you don't have it? So inspiration comes from the association of saints, sadhu sangha. This is where the inspiration to turn to God, to look for God, comes from. Sadhu Sangha. That's why India and so many other, especially in India, they have a principle called Satsang. Satsang. Sadhu Sangha. I mean Sat. Sadhu is Sat. Sat Dadatu. Sadhu. Sadhu means cut. Sadhu. Sadhu. He cuts through the Asat. He cuts through the temporary and reveals the eternal. A doctor cuts out the tumor, which is covering your health. It's a disease in the form of a tumor. It's covering your health, the health of your organ. So he cuts off the tumor and reveals the health. So the sadhu, he cuts off the ignorance, the avidya, the ignorance which is covering the self. It's a tumor on the atma. This avidya, this ignorance is a tumor on the atma. It's preventing the healthy, the atma from experiencing its own health. So the guru, sadhu means cut. He cuts with his words, with the sword of knowledge. He cuts through the ignorance and reveals the soul. He cuts through the bodily conception of life and reveals the Atma. Because buried inside of the Sharir is the Jivatma. That is us. That is the eternal principle, the principle of eternality. The Jivatma, Sachit Anand. So this is what happens in association with Sat personalities. satsang. We hear something from Shastra Praman, the evidence of Shastra. And then we start to think. And as we think, our thinking starts going towards God, towards Bhagavan. And Bhagavan becomes pleased. He becomes happy. He becomes happy when we turn towards him, when we start thinking of him. And then he's in our heart, Antaryami. So then he gives us the aha principle. He gives us an inkling, a particle of inspiration. Aha, yes, actually, this life, this very, very sudurlab, Manusha Janma sudurlab, bhot sudurlab, very, very rare to get this human form of life. And actually, I should utilize this life to realize God. And my real identity, who I really am. Am I Mr. Gupta? Am I really a Baniya? Am I really an Indian? Am I really a man? Am I more than that? Am I something deeper than that? Because I feel that I live forever. I really feel that I exist forever. No one ever has any idea or any remembrance of dying. No one in the history of humanity can ever write about the experience of dying. Because no one ever died. No one ever died and no one ever dies. But everyone can write about the experience of existing. I feel that I exist. I was dreaming and I felt I had a very deep sleep. And I woke up and I said, well, I was sleeping. I was sleeping. I'm experiencing that this body was in a very deep state of rest and sleep, and I woke up feeling happy. And we always feel that I exist. And what do we always want? We always want to exist, because we always exist. We're eternal. Natvaivaham jatunasam, natvam name jananipa. Krishna says, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Ajo nityo shashvato yam purano, nahanyate hanyamane sharayire. He says, I'm always existing. So we are this we have the experience of, that I'm existing. Then someone who's existing, they think about death, they say, death. Death means I can't conceive it. You can never conceive something you never experienced. You can never think about or never dream about or conceive something you've never experienced, right? Think about that. Can you think about or dream about or experience or conceive something that you've never experienced? No. So that's why we can never... If the thought of death comes and we push it out, death. We can't think about it. Because we've never experienced it. The jiva has never experienced death. Never. Because we're eternal, existing. The body just goes, no doubt. Body come and go. Tehino shminyata dehi komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuyati. Boy, we see we're dying all the time. I had a baby's body. Where is it? We put it on a rack. We took the baby, put him on a rack, and in the Middle Ages, they put somebody on a rack and stretched them out. It was a form of torture called the rack. You know the rack in the Middle Ages. They would tie you on the, hold something on your neck and something on your ankles, and they go like this and stretch you and torture you. You know, pull your spine. You know, pull you like this. It's called stretching, called the rack. Torture, medieval torture for prisoners. So they take the baby and then you stretch him and he becomes a young boy, right? And then you stretch him again and he becomes... No. The body is made of cells. Into millions of cells. And every 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, all the cells die and new ones are born. So millions of cells die and millions are born. So we're dying at every second. I die daily. I die to live. Hegel, German philosopher Hegel says, I die to live. We're dying at every minute. Every second we're dying to live. Our life is a series of deaths. Right now we're dying, a million particles of me are dying right now. Thousands of millions of my cells are dying right now and thousands are taking birth. Just like I'm in this body living for a few minutes, a few years, and I die and take birth again. Has anyone had experience of dying? You remember dying? But you remember existing? Do you remember you were existing 50 or 40, 20 years ago? Do you remember that? Yeah, I know. I don't know the details, but I know I was existing. Right? I know I'm existing now because existence, that's called Sat. It's called Sat. Sat means existence. Sat Chit Anand. So this part I'm aware of. I'm aware of this part that I'm existing. I know that I'm existing. Do you agree you're existing? You're existing? You're not just a dream. But you'll cease to exist?
No, the body would stop, the soul would
walk. That's a fact. So now the other aspects of us are the chit and anand. The knowledge. But the knowledge is anuchit. Anuchit. Minute. Very minute cognizance or awareness. And then the anand is covered. It's covered like the sun. The sun is so powerful, but a little rain cloud covers it. Covers our vision of it. Doesn't cover the sun. You go beyond the cloud, the sun will burn your eyes out. You just rise 3,000 feet, put the cloud behind you, look at the sun, your eyes will burn out. So much power is there. So the soul is like the sun. Surya Atma. It's brighter than the sun. But this little cloud-like body, little cloud of this body is covering it. So that anand, that natural anand, or that chit, is that knowledge, that awareness is covered momentarily from the vision of the Atma. I mean the vision of us, we're the Atma. We can't, we see it, we can't avoid our existence. We know we exist very clearly and dynamically and absolutely, unequivocally. Ah, yes, I exist. But I'm made of bliss and I'm made of knowledge. That seems to be, that's covered to us. There's some cloud covering us, and that cloud is ignorance. It's called avidya. Avidya Meg. Cloud of ignorance. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hai Andakar. Krishna Surya Sama. Krishna is like the sun. Krishna consciousness. So this knowledge is like the sun. There's that verse in Bhagavatam. Krishna Swada Mo Pagate Dharma Gyanada Visaha. Brilliant. What is it? Surya. You know that verse? It's about this knowledge is as brilliant as the sun and has arisen just after departure.
I know the word.
At any rate, Shukamuni is saying this knowledge is as brilliant as the sun. So when we get this knowledge comes through Guru and Guru Parampara, then we expand our existence and we start to realize the actual blissful aspect of ourself and the chit, Satchitananda. So satsang, we're discussing what is the principle of satsang, because in satsang we get inspiration to serve God, to turn to God and to try to get liberated. And that part of the inspiration, which is coming from God in the heart, He's giving us that inspiration, is that we will search for Guru, we'll search for teacher. Because we understand that alone and by myself, I can't figure it out. I can't get out. It's impossible. And even when God comes as human being in Manush Lila, Manush Rup, Ram and Parasaram, Krishna, etc., Dasavatar, He takes Guru. Vasishtha was the Guru of Ram. Sanipani Muni is Guru of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Ishwarapuri. Kesha Bharati. So human life, we need teacher. We're so keen to take a teacher to learn be calm. I have a degree in be calm. Right? You tell me. Or computer science. Oh, you got that came in your back pocket when you were born? It was inside your umbilical cord? The degree was built into your umbilical cord? And yet when your mother took it out and said, look, you have a degree. No, you had to have so many teachers and go to school to learn some mundane science. This is a mundane thing. But to learn about God, oh, God, He's in your heart. Everybody knows God. What is this? You don't need a teacher. Oh, God, 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 God. Everybody's heard about God. Is that? But to learn about ABC and 1, 2, and 3 and mathematics and BCom, you need so many professors. And it takes 4, 5, 6 years. Hours and hours and hours and hours a day. But to learn about God, therefore no one knows anything about God. Everybody's in gross ignorance. And they're suffering due to it. Ignorance is the greatest cause of suffering and misfortune. So, the conclusion is, seek your fortune. Seek and ye shall find. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadakshanti te gyanam gyaninas tattvadarshanaha. If you want to see the truth, if you want to have darshan with the truth, then you must find Guru. And pranipatena means you must surrender. Man, tan, dan, Guru Samarpan. Your life, your mind, your man, your tan. Tan means tanu. Tanu means body. Body, sharir, kalivaram. And dan means your wealth. It doesn't mean your bank account. That could mean that if you want to give dakshin or bakshish. Guru dakshin or bakshish. But dan means what is valuable to you, you should give to Guru and God. And there's nothing more valuable than you. So tan man means your mind and your body and anything else you have of value. Your words, your abilities, your skills. That's your dan. That's your contribution, your gift, your offering. It's called pushpanjali. We put flowers in our hand and we offer some flowers. Swaha or whatever, we offer some flowers, pushpanjali. So this pushpanjali is tan man dan. Tan is our body and our mind. Well, what? That's it. That's linga sharir and shukshma sharir. What more? What more is dan? What is dan? Dan is anything, any abilities you have, God-given abilities, you offer them back to God. He gave you the fruit tree, well, you pick the fruits and offer them back to God. You offer the bhog to God and take prasad. So He gave us fruits. He gave us intelligence or ability or maybe money or whatever. Whatever fruits we receive, we offer it back in love. So this should be offered to Guru and to Krishna. And Guru offered to Krishna, then all success will be ours. So this is the talk. Any questions?
As we were talking about the modes of material nature, you were mentioning that even Sadguna, we know, is binding, right? Because
become bound by the sense of happiness.
Happiness. My question is that sometimes there may be a desire for a favorable environment in order to carry on our sadhana bhajan, maybe in seclusion or in some way. So is that desire, which is motivated by a higher cause, and a desire to look for a more favorable environment, how is that justified?
Well, everything depends on ambience or environment, because it's pretty hard to do puja or meditation in Las Vegas inside a casino, because the atmosphere is saturated with tamogun. For example, it's pretty hard to stay dry if someone drops you in the ocean. It's pretty hard to stay dry. You can't stay dry. You're bound to get wet because water is everywhere. So if you're submerged in a tamasic environment, it's pretty hard to stay good. Someone says, listen, go into that brothel and chant your japa. Brothel means house of prostitution. Okay, Hare Krishna, all these naked ladies come and put their arms around you. Oh, come on. Oh, hey, let's relax. Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. that's too much rajagun, too much tamagun. You can't do meditation there. So basically, it's like this. We accept what we made. Because really, a devotee, he desires simply to serve the Lord anywhere, anyhow, and he accepts this is what I have. If I've been given the forest, then I live in the forest and I serve God. If I've been given a place in the city, then I live in the city. Because by consciousness, you transform darkness into light. It all depends on consciousness. You can spend millions of dollars and go on a vacation, but if your consciousness is in hell, you may visit paradise during your vacation, but actually you're in hell. You may go to the most beautiful paradisical environment, some beautiful place, Bali or whatever, some beautiful place. But if your mind is disturbed or agitated, then you might as well be in hell. You won't enjoy it, you won't experience it. So wherever you are, your consciousness will shape your environment. So a devotee doesn't really desire to live in the forest or live in a peaceful place. He simply desires to serve the Lord wherever he is. Because desire is attachment. Krishna tells in Gita, raga and dvesh. Raga and dvesh means attachment. Basically means love and hate. You can look at it this way to make it easier if you don't want to deal with Sanskrit. Raga means attachment. Dvesh means envy. It means hatred. It means dislike. It's like Sankalpa Vikalpa, accepting and rejecting, liking something and disliking, loving and hating. Because envy is a form of hatred. And if that envy accelerates enough, if it accelerates, that envy increases or accelerates and becomes to hatred, and hatred goes more, you can kill someone. You can begin by being envious and kill them. And the famous murders in California, it's called the Sharon Tate case. Charles Manson. Charles Manson was some crazy maniac killer. And he was very... because Sharon Tate was a very beautiful movie star. Like, very beautiful. She had beauty, the opulence of beauty. And this man, Charles Manson, he was like... He was too much crazy about her. So, basically, he wanted her what? For her beauty. Which means, when you want something someone else has, that means you're envious. Basically, our so-called projection of man wanting woman or woman wanting man is based on envy. It's a form of dwesh. It means you want whatever they have something you don't have, so you want it. So that drive is actually a drive, because Krishna narrows it down in Gita. He said all of our drives, all of our actions based on rag and dwesh. So this Charles Manson, he hypnotized some of his followers, who's some kind of real cult guru, and he hypnotized them and told them, go out and kill this movie star. So they went out and murdered. It's a famous case. And he went to jail. And it was all due to envy. So the envy went to hatred and went to murder. He murdered her. Because he couldn't have her. And he became so frustrated and so hateful. Because he was an ordinary nobody. He was a nutcase, nut person. So this is rag and dvesh, love and hate. So we become attached, oh, I want to live there to do bhajan. That's an attachment, that's a rag. And all of our rag should be for Krishna, Krishna rag, Krishna sakti. Asakti means attachment. You say, okay, Krishna, you've given me this place? Okay. I put a few posters. I live in Alajpat Nagar. I turn this into Vrindavan. I make this my bhajan kuti. I put some posters there. I get Tulsi plant, a little Gopal. I offer Tulsi, and I chant Hare Krishna. I'm in heaven. I only desire, all I want is one thing. I just want your mercy. In hell or in heaven, it doesn't matter. They say that a devotee of the Lord, he doesn't mind going to hell as long as there's another devotee there. I'll go to hell as long as I have a devotee that will tell me about Krishna. Because otherwise I would just think, oh, I'm in hell. This is really hell. But then, hey, it's not hell. It's like, it's Krishna's mercy. And besides, you know, it's winter and it's winter right now in Moscow. And being in hell, it's nice. It's warm. It's nice and warm over here in hell. Oh yeah, that's a good way to look at it. We could be in Moscow right now, freezing to death, 25 below zero, but we're in hell. Oh boy, it's Krishna's mercy. I'm glad I'm in hell. I'm glad you came with me to enlighten me. So if we're with a devotee, he can keep our consciousness in the right position. So rag and dvesh, Krishna says we must rise above rag and dvesh because they keep us bound in this world. Aversion, like he says, aversion is the opposite side of attachment. Like someone says, some yogis, they say, oh, women are maya, I stay away from women. But that aversion is dvesh. But that dvesh is the same as rag. Because he's, oh no, women are maya, Then he sees, oh, woman is maya, woman is illusory energy, maya, maya. But he has so much dvesh that creates a samskara. Very strong impression in his chitta. Because that dvesh, because he has hatred for women. Oh, this is the enemy. This is maya. So then he's in the forest. Either attachment, either love or hate creates samskara. Deep, deep impression in the chitta, in the consciousness, which we don't want. Because there's no room for Bhagavan there. It's all prakriti. It's all matter. So now he's in the forest, and then Menaka comes. She's an apsara from heaven. And this rishi is Vishvamitra Muni. Vishvamitra, he was a famous Muni. He was a king before, then he became a Muni. And then it's in Padma Puran, and so many Purans is told. So he's 60,000 years in Satyuga, he's meditating. But he was very much averse to women. He had dvesh, stri dvesh, hatred for women. Oh, women's maya, this is a downfall, I stay away. So then Menaka came and ching, 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 ching. Then when that impulse, when that sound vibration entered his ear, it stimulated his samskara. It rattled his samskara. It rattled it, you can say. Like you have some like a rattle, like a kid's rattle, it makes noise. So that samskara is engraved, it's an engraving, it's an impression in his chitta. So when he heard that sense object of her ankle bells and her kin-kinning, her waist bells, ching, 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 then that went in his ears, then that hit his chitta, his consciousness, that hit that samskara. Then from that samskara came a vasana. Vasana means desire. And very strong desire. Because when you repress something, and when if you compress something, you keep compressing and compressing and compressing. You know what happens? It explodes. Implosion, explosion. Contraction, expansion. That's how they split the atom. The atom, they split the atom, release all the energy because they keep compressing, compressing, and boom! And then you have it, that's the atomic reactor. So when you suppress through, because of dvesh, then you create a samskara. And then he's just meditating. And then it's just hears some ankle bells. And gave up his meditation, and he had union with Menaka and produced a child, Shakuntala, famous apsara Shakuntala. It's in Puran, Itihas. So this is raga and dvesh. We stay clear. Okay, Krishna. Okay, I'm in Delhi. Okay, this is my Brajavan. I'll call my house Brajagokul. I'll call my house Gokul Dham. I'm living in Lajpat Nagar, but I put a little sign outside my house. Gokul Nivas. Braj Nivas. Braj Niketan. Barsan. Barsana. Gokul Dham. It's not Gokul Dham, but it's my Bhav. It's my, everything is your Bhav. And this is, so we have to be careful. We'll go through the world in a neutral way. Attachment is good for God, Bhagavan. That attachment will liberate us. It's transcendental, spiritual attachment. But any other attachment will bind us. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, tyajit yanti kalevaram. Tam tam eva tikantaya sadasad bhavita. Krishna says in the eighth chapter of Gita is called the dying chapter. The death, marana adhyaya. Is that right? Death chapter. Marana adhyaya. How would you say it? Adhyaya means chapter? Yes, adhyaya. Marana adhyaya. The death chapter. Tibetan Book of the Dead. I read that book in college. Very interesting book. Tibetan Book of the Dead. So this is the dying chapter, chapter 8. So Krishna is telling, yum yum, yum yum, yum yum. Yeah, this rubbery is yum yum. Yum yum rubbery saman saptam. Yum yum vapi smaran bhavam. He says, whatever you remember at the time of death, tyajit yanti kalevram, yante, ante kalevram, at the end of this body, tyagi, when you give up this body at the end, whatever you remember, that's what you get in next life. So you remember, your mind goes where your rag is. Wherever your rag is, that's where your mind goes. Wherever your dvesh is, that's where your mind goes. I hate that guy, I hate that guy, I hate that guy. Then you go to the market, you go to GK1, or M Block Market. Oh, there's that guy. I hate that guy, I hate that guy, I want to kill that guy, I hate that guy. I can't stand it. That's heavy samskara in the chitta. Then when death comes, you'll be lying there. And all of a sudden that guy's face will come in front of your mind. Big picture of that guy's face, and you'll die looking at him. The next life you'll become that guy. So we want to have bhakti samskaras. It's called bhakti samskara. Samskara. Like there's some school around here called Vidya Samskara. What did we see? We saw that when we were riding through the hills there. That big billboard that said Vidya Samskara. Samskara. Some school, some boys' school in that Suraj Kunj Road. Big signs that Vidya Samskara, some kind of like high school or something. So what did it say? Curriculum? What was it?
International school. It was a Vidya Samskara International.
Yeah, Vidya Samskara. So we, Bhakti Samskara. So by doing puja and hearing Bhagavat Pat and Thakurji Darshan and Yatra, Tirth Yatra, Giriraj Prikama, Mandir Prikama, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Dan, Shastra Dan, distribution of prasad, these all create bhakti sanskaras. Very purifying for the chitta. It eliminates rag and dvesh and creates devotion, bhakti, Krishna bhakti. And this is desirable. This will make us satisfied and happy. Because we are, by nature, we are devoted beings. We are units of devotion. Units of consciousness. We are individual. We are particles of love. Floating in an ocean of love. We are particles of love floating in an ocean of love. The ocean of love is the ocean of consciousness. And we are consciousness. We are individual particles of consciousness. Krishna is telling Gita, Mamayavamsho jivaloke, Mamayavamsho jivaloke jiva bhuta sanatana. Manakshastrani injani prakriti kani stani karshati. He's telling, Krishna is saying, Mama Amsha, you're my part. And Krishna is the emporium of love. He's Prem Purushottam. He's an infinite abode of love. He's an infinite ocean of Prem, Prem Samudra, Prem Sagar. And we are a particle of consciousness floating in that ocean of love. But now we're covered. We just have to uncover our nature. It is our swabhav. To love is our swabhav. To hate is not our swabhav. That's an imposition due to environment, conditioning. Our primordial nature, our organic reality of the consciousness is the principle of love. To give love and to receive love. This is bhakti. This is the fullest expression of dharma. This is paramarthika. Dharma in its fullest expression is love divine. Brahma Sayuja Mukti, this is a merging, but it is also merging or union is also part of love. But even in union, there's diversity. The two become one, but they remain two. They become one in love, but they're still two individuals. This is bhakti. But in Sayuja Mukti, Brahma Sayuja, the two become one homogeneous unit, and the individuality is lost. There becomes oneness. That in that oneness, in that union of the jiva with the paramatma, the jiva loses his identity. There's no individuality. So it's one for all.
Doesn't happen.
Doesn't really happen. It's kind of because it's an eternal slumber. This merging is an eternal slumber. Because you want to have that kind of relationship of merging with the Lord because of various experiences, you want to give up the individuality, He allows you to think that. But even then, as Krishna says in Gita, you're eternally an individual, but you're like sleeping. Just like when you're sleeping, you forget you have some identity or some role to play or some relationship. That's all forgotten. So some acharyas say this merging into Brahman is like an eternal slumber. You're still individual, but you're sleeping. You're asleep to your individual identity. Your individual identity sleeps, and you're just sleeping in this Brahman, floating in this Brahman, unaware of your individuality. Just as when you're sleeping on the bed, you're unaware of your individuality. You're some other individual. So it's like this. Individuality is really always there. It's provided, that type of realization is there. It's a spiritual realization, Brahma Sayuja, Brahma Kaivalya. But really, it doesn't really even exist. But Krishna or God allows you to think it exists. Because you want that. That's love. Real. This is actually a form of love because Krishna, because Krishna wants to, whatever you want, I'll give you. So you want to become a nothing? You are something, but you want to become nothing? Okay, I'll make you feel like you're nothing. Like some husbands try to make their wives feel like they're nothing. Or wives make their husbands feel like they're nothing. Sometimes. Not. Some wives are loving and husbands are loving. People say, oh, you make me feel like I'm nothing. Bharati. It actually doesn't exist. There's really no such thing, but Krishna explains in Gita, there's three ways to understand the absolute truth: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The absolute truth is one. There's only one. But there's different ways to see it. And Krishna just according to your wish. So what's your question? Yes, it's a Riyakrachena Parampadam Padat Patantiyadav Nadrita Yushmadangriya. It says, Yen ye vrvindaksha vimuktamani nas twayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya Riyakrachena Parampadam Padam Patantiyadav Nadrita Yushmadangriya. This is in the teachings of Lord Brahma in 10th canto of Bhagavatam. No, I think so. Yen ye vrvindaksha vimuktamani nas. Maybe no. I can't remember. Maybe it's 7th canto. Prahlad Shiksha. But there is saying people, they think vimukta maninas avibuddha shuddhaya avibuddha shuddhaya, their intelligence is actually upside down, virod. What do you call it, upside down? No, not altered. There's another word, begins with A. Aparita. Viparita. Yeah, viparita. Viparita buddhi. It's opposite. So their intelligence is impure. Avashud. Avashuddha buddhaya. Shud. Avashud. It's not shud. Their intelligence is not pure. Buddhi. So they think. So they stay there for some time, patantyado, and then they fall down. That's why I said, when you sleep, you wake up. Right? Is it right? When you go to sleep, you wake up. Is it right? You agree? Yes. It's an analogy. When you go to sleep at night, you wake up in the morning, is it? So it's called eternal slumber. So practically, they merge into Brahman for a long time, but then they fall down again because at the end of creation, it all starts and they come out again. Because Brahman, you know, this whole creation is expanding and, you know, it's coming in, exhaling of Vishnu comes into being, then he inhales and goes annihilated. So for a long time, long period of time, they're merged in Brahman, then they come out again. So there's really only one realization. There's actually only one realization. God is one. God is the Supreme Person. That is the complete and eternal full liberation. Anything else is approximate. Really, it's like that. It's temporary.
That follow is very merciful.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's his mercy because Krishna knows that really this isn't very good for you. Now you've been sleeping for so long because you wanted to sleep forever. So now I'm going to sleep, so now it's time for you to wake up. So when Vishnu, at the time of annihilation, when Vishnu goes to sleep and annihilates all creation, then that jiva comes out. He wakes up. Hey, what's happening? Oh, where was I? Oh, anyway, let me back to square one. Start over again.
One question.
Yes.
Regarding the spiritual mastery of God. A few days ago I was talking to a senior person and he, whatever he spoke, confused me a little bit. He said, we are at ISKCON and Srila Prabhupada is like a son and his mercy is all around. And he said, do you think you need a spiritual master to get Srila Prabhupada's mercy? It's available. You're at ISKCON, it's available. So you're speaking like that. So I couldn't, because he was senior, so it was...
Senior, but one may have a 90-year-old body but be a fool. Kapila Muni was a young boy who was 9 years old. He was speaking Kapila Shiksha to his mother. It was extremely astute teachings. Prahlad Maharaj was 5 years old and he was speaking to his schoolmates and he was also speaking to Hiranyakashipu in 7th canto of Bhagavatam. Such beautiful Sanskrit slokas. And he was only five. So body age doesn't have anything to do with wisdom. Wisdom is something else. Wisdom is something, is a gift of God. Physical or material knowledge you may gain on your own endeavor, but wisdom actually comes from God. Spiritual insight. Krishna is telling that in Gita. Tesham satatayuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam tadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upyantite. Krishna says in Gita, if one does priti bhajan means bhajan with love, serves the Lord with love, then he says, Dadati buddhi. He said, Krishna is saying, I give intelligence by which you can come to me. Tesham satata yuktanam. Those that are always connected with me. Satatam yuktanam. This verse, chapter 10, verse 10. Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give buddhi yoga. I give the intelligence by which you connect with me. Again, union, connection. Based on priti, loving connection. Priti bhajan, Krishna's pleased. And if he's pleased, he gives you something. When someone's happy with you, they give you a gift. If your teacher, if your mother is happy with the child, she gives some gift, some cookie, some cake, some whatever. So God is the Supreme Father. And when he's happy with us, priti bhajan, then he gives us intelligence, buddhi yogam, tam. And he says, tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam, tadami buddhi yogantam yena mam upayanti te. I give the intelligence by upayanti te, by upayanti, by which you can come up. Upayanti means, actually, yanti up. Upayanti means to go up, to come to me, to go to God. By kunta prapti, prem prapti, brindavan prapti, golok prapti. This comes from God Himself when He's pleased. So this is how this can come when you're 5 years old. So you may be an ISKCON or any con or whatever con for so many years, but if you're not actually doing priti bhajan, you will be a fool. You'll speak all nonsense, foolish things, all kinds of imagination things. But you may be an ISKCON for 1 year, but if you're actually serving properly, Krishna gives such nice achi buddhi, good intelligence. To call a spade a spade. Call a spade a spade. In other words, you'll be able to discern reality from illusion. Like you could smell a skunk. We say smell a skunk. You were hearing from this person who so-called, you said, senior person or so-called long-term devotee. But you could understand there's something wrong here. He's speaking incorrectly, but out of respect and out of proper etiquette, you kept quiet. But it was not ringing in consonance. His vibration was not ringing in consonance with your intelligence, your devotional intelligence. There was a discord. Understand discord?
It's not like that. Even Shastras and Bhagavatam is there.
Guru, Shastra and Sadhu. This train has three rails. It's a very special train. Very, very tight train. Usually train has two rails. Rail, right? Railway. Railroad. The road of rails. We say tracks. Railroad tracks. You say rails. So these three rails, Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, and they all run parallel. So if one is a Sadhu or a Guru, he must speak on the strength of Shastra. That's his strength. He doesn't make up something. Well, the Prabhupada is like, this is all poetic, this is all sentiment. This is religion without philosophy is only sentiment. Remember it? Religion without philosophy is sentiment. Oh, yes, Prabhupada is the son, and it's just Mayavad philosophy, basically. Everywhere it's saying you must take a guru, must take diksha in your ear, not Prabhupada is the son, he's a son, you don't need a guru, everyone's. Of course, that's obviously Ritvik philosophy.
Yeah, that's right.
It's pretty clear. But that there's no such thing. There's no the word you can read the entire Vedic literature. You can read all the Vedic literature, and the term Ritvik, you can read every single Vedic literature. I guarantee you can read everything in Sanskrit. And there's a term Ritvik, R-T-V-I-K, Ritvik. Ritvik is an appointed priest to engage in a yajna in the absence when a Brahmin becomes sick. If a Brahmin is appointed. Jajaman hires a Brahmin to do a home or yajna. So, this term Ritvik is when the Purohit, who is supposed to do that yajna for the Jajaman, he becomes sick. So then he appoints his leading disciple. He says, "I am appointing you as a Ritvik." It means power of attorney. You understand power of attorney? So the Ritvik means that. It's called Advarya. I think it's called Advarya. There's four different priests in a good yajna, big yajna. There's four different ones. One's called the Advarya, and there's different names. So the Ritvik is an appointed Purohit to stand in and do a fire yajna on behalf of chief Purohit. That's it. Nothing about diksha. He has no diksha function. That term is only in this regard. Ritvik Acharya, Ritvik Guru, that's a totally bogus thing. Absolutely bogus. Nowhere in Prabhupada's writings, nowhere in the Vedas, nowhere. And everywhere, you must have living Guru, live, you know. See me, touch me, feel me. Guru. Vapu Seva, Vani Seva, serve the Vani, the Guru Vani. Serve his words, Vapu. Vapu means Tano, body, serve his body. This is everywhere same. Now, it's Kali Yuga, there's every kind of philosophy. It used to be philosophy, now it's philosophy. Murk Darshan. Murk Darshan, right? Murka Darshan. Fool's philosophy. You have your philosophy, that philosophy, every philosophy. Darshan, there's six darshans. The Vedas have, it's called Sad Darshan. There's six darshans, there's six philosophies in Veda. Veda Puran, there's six different philosophies. That's it, boss, finished. But nowadays, every Tom, Dick, and Harry has a philosophy. The art of begging, the art of living, the art of dying, the art of farting. Excuse my English. This lady is asking a question. When do we know when we really surrendered? Well, it's a continuum. Because it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's not a one-time thing. It's almost like saying, when do we know when we really loved? Well, I loved. I think I'm loving, and I continue to love, or whatever. So it's ongoing. So it begins. The beginning is Guru Pad Ashraya. Ashraya means shelter. Shelter means surrender. This is the first step of bhakti. This is the foundation. Surrender. You begin your surrender. How do I know I surrendered? When you take diksha. That's step one in surrender. And then what's in? There's six limbs of there's. It's called. Sharanagati or Sharanapati. Sharanapati or Sharanagati means surrender. And there's six varieties of surrender. It's Anukalyena Sankalpa, Pratikulya Sivarjanam, Goptitve Varnam Tata. There's six different, accept everything favorable, reject everything unfavorable. Rakshishit Titi Vishwaso, Karpanya Atmana Shekmana. There are six different things. One is to accept everything favorable for Krishna's service, reject everything as unfavorable, to always feel meek and humble, like Karpanya, and then to surrender everything for the Lord's pleasure. So we can measure, so it's an ongoing, it's a continuum. We're always continuing to surrender because there's six principles to accept everything favorable. Okay, how do I know if I'm surrendering? Well, is reading Playboy magazine and is reading... Penthouse magazine, is this favorable for Krishna bhakti? Will this increase my attachment to Krishna's service, to hearing and chanting about Bhagavan? Or perchance, will this increase my attachment to the body of women or naked woman or whatever, and inflame my desires for sex, which is maitun, yan maitunadi grihamedi sukami tucham. This is the main binding force in this world, is sex attraction. So that attraction is part of our nature. This is our svabhav. The Atma is a principle of attraction. But that attraction is meant for Bhagavan, Bhagavan Sankarshan. We're meant to be attracted by God and to love God, not matter. Love spirit, not matter. Love God, not man. Or mammon. As the Bible says, mammon. 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 It's in Bible. It means matter, material energy. Maya. So then we will say, I think that Guruji probably wouldn't like this. It wouldn't be a very good idea. So I will not do it. That's called Sharanagati, surrender. So we have umpteen chances every day to surrender. So how do you know you're surrendered? How do you know when you're fully surrendered? When moment to moment to moment, every moment of every day is used for the pleasure of Krishna. Then you know, and at that time, when you're at that level of activity, and that level of awareness, and that level of consciousness, then you will know it, and everyone else will know, that you are indeed a pure devotee of the Lord. That you are 100% Shuddha Bhakt. You are not only Shudbhakta, but Premi Bhakta. Because you can only behave like that, think like that, and act like that if you are full of pure love of God. Premi. You're a Premi. Krishna Premi. That's when your surrender is perfect. When you get to that level of Krishna Prem, then you are a fully surrendered soul. There's no more Maya in you. There's no more independent desire in you. There's no more Icha. Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvanda Mohina Bharata. Krishna says in Gita, Icha. This is because of Icha, because of desire. Itch. Icha. It's very interesting. Because in English we have itch. And desire actually transforms into itch. Sex desire is an itch. It's actually an itch. Hunger is also an itch. Your tongue is itching, your belly is itching. It's an itch. It's a scratch. If you scratch it, you think it feels good. It's an appetite. It's a vegam. It's a pushing. It's called vegam. Jiva vegam, what is it? Vacha vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udra pasta vegam. Vegam means a pushing. We're pushed. Our desires are pushing us to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. It's a body. It's all body desire. The body shop. Well, the Atma is different. Oh, attraction, I am made of attraction, because attraction is a principle of love. The atoms are attracted to each other. From the atom to the planets, from the bird to the beast, from the insect to the ant to the elephant, everyone is moving on the principle of attraction, because that's the Atma's nature, to be attracted to God. But the Atma is expressing the original attractive principle is being expressed toward matter rather than spirit. The atoms are directing their attraction towards other atoms, when they should be directing their attraction towards the Param Atom, Param Atma. Param Atom, or Param Atma. Man is attracted to woman, woman is attracted to man. What is it the woman, or is it the man, or is it me? The attraction is me. I am the attraction. The attraction is me. It's not the woman that's attracting me. The attraction is me. I am attracted. I'm made of attraction. It's not that she's attraction. I am attraction. I have attraction in me. It's part of me. The ability to attract, you know, a man attracts woman, woman attracts man. Wait a minute. Let's go back a step further. We're talking about the principle of attraction. Do I have the principle of attraction? Yes. I have it, because I am it. I am attraction. But now I'm directing my attraction to woman. And woman's attracting her attraction. But forget the woman, forget the man. I just sit in a box somewhere. I feel attraction. Something. I'm attracted to something. What is it? Oh, and then if I'm a man's body, you put a woman in front of me. Okay, woman. But there's nothing, and I try to trace out, follow this principle, this primordial urge of attraction. Where is it? It's coming. Is it coming from my skin? Is it coming from my genital? Is it coming from my tongue? Where is it? It's coming from me. And what is me? Am I genital? Am I tongue? Am I eyes, nose, hands? I want to grab someone, touch somebody? No, I'm Atma. I'm eternal being. And attraction is coming out of me. It's my nature. Where should I put it? You take my attraction. And then you have your attraction. Yeah, you take mine. Then we combine as man and woman. But actually, Bhagavan is saying, Murli Vadana, he's saying, hey, what about me? I'm calling you. You're not attracted to me? I'm Krishna, you know, Krishna. Krishna Sankarshan. Karshan. Na, Anand. If you're attracted to me, you'll become full of Anand. Krishna Anand. Krishna Karshati Ananda Dadati. I will give you Anand if you become attracted to me. So, hey, wait a minute, I've got this whole ball of attraction. It has nothing to do with body or genital or tongue or stomach or anything. It has to do with the Atma. And I'm going to turn my love light towards you, baby. And that baby is baby Krishna. Gopal! Ah, Gopal! Ah, Gopal! Oh, Gopal! Please accept my attraction. And he said, I'm made of attraction to mommy. And Gopal jumps in your lap and wraps his arms around you. This is Gopal Prem, Bhagavan Prem. This is real. This is the essence. This is a Saragrahi, the essence. Everything else is bekar, it's all knuckly, it's all cheap imitation. All these lovers and love songs, I love you. It's all exploitation, number one, exploitation. This whole Bhur Bhuvaswa is a plane of exploitation. Nothing more, nothing less. But these are hard words, and we don't, you know, I had enough, you know, prasad, baba, cello, go back to Vrindavan. Baba jao, this is nice, here's 100 rupees jao. Go home. Come back, and maybe we'll call you in 6 months, we have to recover. Call you in 6 months, it's too much for now. Anyway, did you get that latest DVD? Oh yeah, Steven Spielberg, wow!